it's not going to be easier to face 10 years from now. It's not going to be easier to face 20 years from now. I think if I stay in this space, I'm going to die.
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces. I also bring you ideas and techniques that you can grab and use to set goals, create, and unlock your potential for changing yourself and the world. And now let's get to the show. Hey there, this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm super happy you're here. Welcome. And I'm super happy to introduce you to today's guest. She's going to rock your world. Sarah Kame Ramsey is a creative solution specialist and relationship expert. She helps people unravel complicated situations so they can move forward faster in both business and life. Ah, this is singing my song. People make over 35,000 decisions a day, yet decision-making and problem-solving is not a skill that we're taught in school. Through solution-based thinking, Sarah's bringing life-changing clarity to help people find answers to problems and decisions that, on the surface, seem impenetrable. As the host of the globally acclaimed podcast Toxic Person Proof and best-selling author of Toxic Person Proof, Clear the Confusion and Learn to Trust Yourself, Sarah is no stranger to unraveling complex issues, and she provides a sense of power and direction to her clients, enabling them to create positive momentum both personally and professionally. Oh, do I need to talk to you, Sarah? Welcome.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
This is so fabulous. What you're doing, the work that you're doing is something that I am incredibly curious about, because there's so much baggage that we carry around day in and day out. And it sounds like you're helping people untangle all of that, which I'm so excited about. But I want to, as I do with everybody, I want to stop for a second and go back. How did you come to this? How did you come from where you used to be to realizing, you know what, untangling these problems is my life's calling?
Great question. So my life used to be very, very tangled. I grew up, my dad was a pastor, and so he was in the same church for 30 years. Mm. And I worked in that church. It was a very large church. I worked in that church. All my best friends went to that church because I'd been there for so long. And my ex-husband's family worked for that church. Mm. Okay. So that is what I call a spaghetti problem.
Yes, I can see that.
Right. It is very interwoven, especially when I was trying to decide if I was going to get a divorce or not.
Mm.
Okay. So not only am I thinking, should I get a divorce? Is this, you know, in the best interest of me and my kids? I was thinking, is my dad going to get fired? People keep telling me God hates me if I decide to get a divorce.
Wow.
I will literally lose my job because I can't get a divorce and work at this church. Am I going to split the church and make everyone in my, hurt my family, hurt my friends? I mean, it affected everyone. When I went to my divorce lawyer, he said, it's like the prince and princess are splitting the kingdom.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You know, no pressure, no problem. No
none
pressure.
At all.
None at all. Yeah. Especially knowing that God was going to hate me, which is very exciting. So, so I obviously, it was such a big decision and such a complicated decision that it was a decision I kept putting off. And my hair was falling out. I was losing weight, gaining weight. My skin was like, I had all these skin issues from the stress. And I just kept thinking, delay, overthink, delay, overthink, delay, overthink. Until I was driving several friends around in Charlotte, North Carolina, completely sober, 2 p.m, no prescription drugs, no drinking, nothing, blackout while driving the car.
Wow.
My friend has to grab the wheel. So luckily no one was hurt, but that was really my rock bottom, right? That was the wake up call I needed, not only to move forward in the divorce, but to move forward in having a framework for making decisions. And so I took my spaghetti problem and turned it into a waffle problem.
I love it.
And I promised myself I would never get my life looking like spaghetti again. I would never ravel things together in that way that I had no way out, right? And that everything felt so complicated. And it really was, you know? So trying to take each problem, like, where am I going to live, is one noodle. Drop it in one waffle square. What am I going to tell people? Another noodle. Is my dad going to lose his job? Another noodle. Where am I going to work now? Another noodle. How am I going to talk to my kids? How am I going to protect my kids? Another noodle. What divorce lawyer am I going to use? Another noodle. Financial issues. That's another noodle. And when we start seeing them as their own separate squares with their own separate action plans, then you can start to move forward.
I'm taking a second because, wow, okay. So it seems to me, first of all, that you have taken the reins of your life, right? That notion of, I am just not going to let it be this convoluted mess anymore. And that takes a certain amount of strength of character and sense of self. How did you develop that? Or was that innate to you?
And that's always the question people ask. And the honest answer is, I thought I was going to die if I didn't do it. I mean, I truly, my body was falling apart. My health was falling apart. And this was in my 30s, my early 30s or late 20s. I don't remember, you know, it's all spaghetti together now mingled in. But, you know, I thought, how could it possibly get better from here? Like, my health is, it's not going to be easier to face 10 years from now. It's not going to be easier to face 20 years from now. I think if I stay in this space, I'm going to die. And then my body was shutting down, you know, and then the blackout really confirms that. And so then when people at that point started saying, well, you have to stay, you know, you're going to ruin everyone's lives if you make this decision, I thought, but I'm going to die if I stay in it. And I knew my nervous system could not handle anymore. And that's really what I teach people now. It's so easy to be scared of what happens if things change. And we forget to be afraid of what happens if things don't change.
Right.
Right. And so I started really just leaning in. I don't think of it as a place of strength. Honestly, it was a place of desperation. At the time, the strength came after, and I have an idea for that too, but it was really just like, oh my gosh, what if things don't change? What if I'm doing this when I'm 60? What will my life have been? And that was really the first step. And then the second step, where I feel like I do have strength, is saying, this situation has already stolen enough of my life. I'm not going to let it steal the next 10 years. The people pleasing, the hoping I can make everyone happy, the marriage, all those things. I'm not going to let the version of me that got myself in that situation take over the reins the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of my life.
That's really powerful. And that's something that I keep, you know, you're saying it was desperation, but, you know, when my mom divorced my dad, it took a lot of courage because everything in her life was telling her that she shouldn't leave, that she should, you know, you should try and stick it out and work it through and figure it out and all of this other stuff. And there does come this point where you're like, you know what? No, I can't. I have to think of myself. And so you were going through this in that moment of everybody around you going, hey, this is not what you're allowed to do. You are supposed to stay and work it out. And yet you went, no, I have to look at this problem a different way. So you said that there's a second step that where the strength does come. I would love it if you'd talk a little bit about that notion of no. Even though everybody around me is saying X, I need to go do Y. How does that work?
So I really think about what I want to be and what I don't want to be. And I hate the idea that anyone would ever think I was stupid. And I hate the word stupid, but when I'm talking to myself, right, that's really what it's like, oh, I don't want to be stupid. Okay. And I kind of like really leaned into that quote that some people say Einstein said. We're not really sure if Einstein said it, but you know, you can't expect to do the same thing over and over again and get different results. And that is really my motto at this point. You know, is it working? Keep doing it. Is it not working? Do something else. And it is so simple and so easily missed. right? And in my first book, Becoming Toxic Person Proof, I talked about something called smart girl syndrome, which means if it's not working, I just need to work harder. Okay. And that's a useful trait in some circumstances. I was a classical piano player. I didn't start out playing Beethoven and Chopin, right? I started out playing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and then I worked harder and then could play Debussy. Right. But it was that hard work and just do it over and over again. Okay. And so that there was a gift to that. There's a gift to that if you need math tutoring. There's a gift to that in some ways if you're building a business, right? But there's certain things in our life that we can work harder, but if there's 10 years of data or 20 years of data or even 5 years of data that says, you know, you've been doing the same thing and for 5 years, you've made very little to no movement. Are you going to do it for another 5 years? And I love to use the example of my own daughter at this point. She's very smart, but during COVID, she missed a lot of reading, right? The schools were online or shut down or, you know, these types of things. And so I hired her reading tutor and she got really great results with a reading tutor. But I tell people, you know, what if I hired her a reading tutor and 2 years later, she couldn't read. Do you think I should hire that reading tutor for year three? And everyone says, no, you should not hire that reading tutor for year three. And it's like, okay, have you been seeing the same therapist for 2 years and you're still stuck? Have you been in the same relationship for miserable for 2 years and you're still stuck? Have you been watching your mother's behavior for the, you know, 40 years and then you keep hoping she's going to be different? And they kind of sit back and go, okay, I get your point. You know, and it feels, you know, I'm a recovering people pleaser and it feels mean to say it, but the shift I made in my own heart is it's mean not to say it. Because all I'm asking is, what changes have you seen? And if you're seeing changes, for example, let's say you, my husband, he was almost pre-diabetic, right? When he went in for his checkup and he stopped drinking sweet tea. He was really addicted to sweet tea. He would have 8 or 9 glasses of sweet tea a day, which is an enormous amount of sugar. Mm-hmm. And he stopped drinking sweet tea and immediately was no longer pre-diabetic and actually lost a lot of weight just from that sweet tea. Okay. That's a strategy that works. And if I say to him, hey, did giving up sweet tea help you improve your health? That's a very easy question to answer. It's only hard to answer if we don't like the answer, right? Like, well, you've been with the same therapist for 2 years and you still really feel stuck. It's not mean that I ask the question. You just don't like the answer because the strategy isn't working and it needs to be changed.
Absolutely. It's absolutely true. And it's interesting that notion of the reason some people stay stuck is they don't like the answer to the questions they'd have to answer if they decided to unstick themselves. And that it's so fascinating to me because there are certain decisions we make easily, right? What I want to have for dinner can be an easy decision. Do I want to take that walk before I go back from lunch? That's also can be an easy decision. But the ones that are really personal and individual, like, do I want to stay in this relationship? Is there something about this that's making me unhappy? And if so, what is it? Those questions we shy away from. And I guess the question I have for you is, how do you learn to listen to yourself?
And the easiest way, we don't want to start with the largest problems in our life, right? So I like to think about, there's a lot of conversation about self-love, right? And not enough conversation, I think, about self-integrity. Mm. Which is, this is what I said I was going to do, and then I'm going to do it, right? I told you I was going to show up today. I've told you now, I don't know, two or three times. We've interacted multiple times. You were on my podcast, Toxic Person Proof, and my new Problem Solved. And so there's a conversation of when I tell you I'm going to show up, you believed me. Right. Sure. I've shown up for you before. You weren't mm-hmm. thinking today, I wonder if Sarah's going to come, because I told you I was going to come. And the other times I said I was going to show up, I did show up. Right. So there's that trust built, and but holding ourselves to that integrity. I said I was going to walk today. Did I? I said I was going to not waste money at, buying, Starbucks today. I don't have any issues with you buying coffee, but that's an example people use, right? I said I was going to do this and I did it. I said I was going to reach out to that friend and I did it. I said I was going to have that hard conversation and I did it. I said I was going to show up for my kids in a certain way and I did it, right? Whatever it is. And when you start to build that self-integrity, I know I'm going to do what I said I was going to do. That's not a question at this point. So it's easier to listen to myself because I'm not playing guessing games with myself on, am I not? Will I do it? Will I not? Maybe, maybe not, maybe not. And it takes time, right? It takes time. But that's one of the interesting, the people in my real life, not my online life, even though I think they're the same thing at this point. I had somebody call me from Canada, and she was wanting me to be in a summit, and she was surprised. She goes, oh my gosh, you're even more friendly and bubbly on the phone. And I said, did you think I was going to be a different personality? Like that would be a terrible thing, And, but the people in my quote unquote real life, they're like, gosh, you just say you're going to do something and it just happens. I just wish I had an ounce of that. And I was like, do you think it's easier for me? Do you think I have like a magic fairy that pushes me? I don't. I just do it. I'm scared and I do it anyway. I'm terrified and I do it anyway. That's what it takes.
Absolutely. I feel like everything you say, I'm like, yes, 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 1,000 times. Yes. Yeah, for sure. And and it's interesting because I talk to my clients about this kind of stuff too. But we always go, okay, break it down to the smallest steps. What is the tiniest thing you can do? So when someone comes to you and they have huge problems, what is the path you take them on or go with them on, I guess is a better way of saying it, to help them get to that place of letting go of the overwhelm? Because it's gotten to me anyway, what I talk to them about is it's gotten small enough that they feel they can handle it, right? Mm-hmm. How do people who come to you with these huge problems, how do you help them do the work to get to the place where they can take those actions?
Within my client community and the people who work with me, they know the rule is to start with the problem I'm trying to solve is blank. Okay. And they kind of set their own bullseye. They at least figure out a problem to solve. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if they say, I'm not sure what problem I'm trying to solve. And that's fine. They had that self-awareness of, okay, I know there's a problem I need to solve. I'm not sure how to get there. That is its own problem to solve. Right. That's okay. That's its own problem to solve. Okay. So it sounds like you probably have a spaghetti problem or you're in spaghetti thinking and we need to waffle it down. Does that feel true for you? And they're like, yep, that's what I need. So you can either make it either kind of brain dump their spaghetti or write down their spaghetti. And then they can truly pick out if say you write this out. Okay. And I want to start a business, but I'm really scared because my dad has always told me I was going to be a failure. And I know he thinks like 9-to-5 security is the right thing to do. And if I leave, people think I'm not even going to work. And then my spouse is going to be mad at me because then I'm going to take that money in savings and invest in a business coach. And then which business coach am I going to invest in? Okay. That's spaghetti thinking. Okay. And that's how people talk.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's how we think too, isn't it?
That's how we think.
Yeah.
That's how we think. So that's how we talk. And I don't have anything against therapy. I have so many therapists that I love, but I am a little bit concerned that are, I just want to be a good listener or, I want to be emotionally intelligent is a bit feeding that spaghetti thinking.
Hmm. How?
Right. Because we become unable to separate our emotional problems to solve from our practical problems to solve.
Oh, fascinating.
Okay. In that last scenario, how your dad is going to feel about you and, you know, how you're going to communicate with your spouse about taking money out of the savings account for a business coach, those are not the same problem. Not even close to the same problem. But your brain gave it to me as a spaghetti problem, as if those two were connected.
Mm.
Okay. But if you're creating action plans, if I say, okay, so emotional problem to solve is, you know, getting over the guilt, the control that your dad may still have in your life. Does that feel true to you? They're like, yes, that's an emotional problem to solve. Okay. So a practical problem to solve is, you know, how to either raise more money or figure out how to finance the business coaching, or how to have a conversation with your spouse, which would be one's a financial problem to solve, stick a label on it. One's a communication problem to solve, stick a label on it. Do those things feel true to you? And they're like, yes. I say, okay, so there's three problems to solve. One, the emotional problem of how to let go of the guilt of your dad. One, the financial problem of how you're going to finance a business coach. And then one, communication problem of how to talk to your spouse. Does that feel clear for you? And usually they can solve their own problems once it's laid out that way. They don't need me. They need me for that step, right? They don't even need me quite often to action those things. We live in the information age. There's so many articles and trainings and this and that. To me, it's once you get it to those separated issues, almost most of those things can kind of be solved in a podcast or an article. It's the step to get it to that place of clarity where you see it as separate waffle squares rather than the spaghetti problem.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're reminding me of something that I used to do when I was a kid. And that was whenever my mom had tangled necklaces in her jewelry box, mm-hmm. I would get the job, and I loved the job, of untangling the chains, right? And they would come at a complete mess. And it was so lovely to be able to work through, and it took a lot of patience, but to sort of unravel them and then have them all laying out where I could see them all, and they were all fixed. So personally, I love doing that. There's a ton of overwhelm that happens, though, if you're not someone who likes doing that. So, yes, obviously they can come to Sarah K. Ramsey and get coaching, but you have to know that you need that kind of help, right? Like you said, smart girl syndrome is you're just going to keep working on it and working on it. And so then you're stuck. And I guess the question I have for you is, someone comes to you and they're obviously very stuck, or they're in smart girl syndrome. What's the first step for them? What do you help them do to get unstuck?
In the spaghetti waffle action exercise really is useful. If I say, hey, you know, what's going on with you? And they do spaghetti thinking. This is something people can use at work. This is something people can use with their kids. This is something people can use with their friends. And they brain dump on you. They spaghetti dump on you. And you say, hey, I heard this podcast recently, and this woman was talking about like how to unravel problems. Would you be cool with me like trying it out on you? And most people are curious, right? They're like, okay, yeah. Like, yeah, what do you mean? And so then you as the listener, okay, this is, people can coach each other. This is especially really important for management or parents or people in leadership positions, right? And they say, okay. And as you are listening, I promise you will always hear people's problems. It's like the rose-colored glasses. Like I just either put on the glasses or took them off, but you never see it the same way again. You will automatically start seeing other people's problems and start to waffle them out now that you see it. It will be harder with our own. That's why we kind of need partnerships. But just to say, hey, okay, so one problem I heard is that you're worried about your dad. Another problem I heard is that you're worried about your spouse. Another problem I heard is that you're worried about money. Is that right? Okay, so what if we thought of those as like separate problems to take action on rather than as kind of one problem to take action on? And obviously that's very simple, but that's way more than is happening in most conversations. Because usually what people are saying is, I'm really sorry you're going through that. That seems really hard. Have you always been mad at your dad? Maybe you should see a therapist. Gosh, I just hate that. Yeah, it sucks to have money problems. Your spouse should support you. How dare he not support you or she support you? You know, you need to go after your dream. So it doesn't matter if they're not good with you spending money. You should just do you, girl or guy. Do you hear the drastic difference in those two things? And I think good leaders are good listeners. And I think great leaders help other people solve their problems, not tell them what to do. Did you hear? I never told you what to do. I unraveled your thinking for you. And I laid out all three necklaces. And I said, which necklace do you think would be best to start with? Which necklace do you think you should wear tonight? And we're asking people what necklace they think they should wear tonight when all the necklaces are tangled up.
Yeah. And it seems like even just thinking about it in those terms, it feels incredibly overwhelming if what you're trying to do is make a decision to stick with the necklace analogy, which necklace? And so you said something, that I think is really interesting. You said that we make like 35,000 decisions a day. And wow, first of all, it's not, to me, those aren't conscious decisions. I imagine they're probably subconscious, but I've never heard that number before. Holy moly. How do we handle that when some of those decisions I imagine are micro decisions, some of them are bigger decisions, but what if those decisions are contributing to spaghetti thinking? How do we deal with that? How do we deal with making 35,000 decisions a day without getting into some of that overwhelm that leads to spaghetti thinking?
That number comes from an estimate. That, I mean, there's a thousand people. If you Google 35,000 decisions a day, you're going to see tons of information on that. But we think that number originally came from a Cornell University study that asked people how many decisions they thought they made about food a day. Mm-hmm. And people estimated like 17 decisions about food. And when it was studied, they actually made 219 decisions about food each day on average.
Wow.
Okay. So 219 decisions about food alone. That's that you can see kind of where the 35,000 decision number comes from. Okay. In the building. Okay. If that's just food, then what about driving? What about what teacher your kid should have next year? What about, are you going to change jobs or not? You know, those kinds of things. And I really like to help people think about major and minor league decisions, right? And if there is a minor league decision that is not going to matter in a week, we want to make those decisions as quickly as possible. We want to really not overfeed those decisions, right? And that can be a practice. Also, identify yourself as a decision maker. Now that you know you make that many decisions a day, because a lot of people say, oh, I'm just not good at making decisions. Okay, so if you tell yourself I'm not good at making decisions, you're not going to get better at making decisions, right?
Sure.
But when you start to say, gosh, I'm already making so many decisions, how fast can I make some of these, right? And it's like, okay, coffee or tea, go. You know, chicken or beef, go. You know, some of those decisions that are very minor league decisions, we want to kind of starve those decisions, right? We don't want to give them too much energy, or we're going to get into decision fatigue and not have enough energy left over when the big decisions come, which are those major league decisions, which is what we want to spend our time and energy on.
I'm taking a second and taking all of that in. So if you, we talked earlier about this notion of being a problem solver. And I imagine what you just said about making decisions and giving the energy to the bigger decisions as opposed to the smaller ones that you don't really need to pay that much energy towards. How do the two relate? How would you relate this notion of making these bigger decisions and solving problems for yourself, maybe at work, maybe with your spouse? How do they correlate if they do?
It was interesting when I started this work. I think in terms of solving problems, and a lot of people don't like that language. My husband was thinking about changing jobs, and I said, oh, you know, what problem are you trying to solve? Which is the magic question that to me sets the bullseye. Mm-hmm. Okay, what problem are you trying to solve? I want to feel more loved in my relationship. I want to feel more respected at work. I want to have more energy at the end of the day. I want to have more money in my bank account. I want to build wealth for myself. Okay, these are problems to solve to me. Okay, but a lot of people think of them more as decisions to make. So it's really interesting whether people identify a problem to solve or a decision to make. Because mm-hmm. I think sometimes people associate problem to solve with a major issue in their life. Okay. But I still like that question because, you know, people say, oh, there's not problems, there's only opportunities. I think that's crazy talk. Like, that is crazy talk. If your child can't, can't get out of bed because they're so obsessed with video games, that's a problem to solve, not a decision to make. If you're going to change companies after being with the same place for 20 years or talk a CEO into signing a contract, or these are problems to solve, right? And so really just getting really clear about what problem you're trying to solve. And then until you can't make any decisions, until you figure out what the outcome is that you want. And that's where that bullseye is. Okay. The problem I'm trying to solve. Okay. I'll tell you this. Writing a book is absolutely terrible for your health. I didn't know that starting out, right? I mean, you just think about, like, I'll look at my little Fitbit and it's like, you've made 300 steps today walking from home. I'm like, 300 steps the whole day. Oh my gosh, this is terrible. You know? And so a problem I was trying to solve is to kind of balance my my inactive lifestyle during the process of writing this book with my health. You know, I couldn't eat as much if I'm only moving 200 steps a day, right? And so the problem I was trying to solve is, you know, maintaining my weight while writing this book. And I think I've used two weight examples. I hate to do that, but I will say the weight loss industry is a $264 billion industry. So we know a lot of people can relate to this example. And sure. So, you know, that was a problem I'm trying to solve. It's not a decision of, am I going to eat Cheerios or chicken for dinner? Right? Like that's a decision to make. But if I don't know what problem I'm trying to solve, I can't reverse engineer the process of decisions I need to make.
I can see what you're saying, absolutely. And yet the thing that I keep coming up with, like, for someone who is new to this mm-hmm. way of looking at things, how do you identify the problem? How, like, you're mm-hmm. saying, oh, I want to change jobs after 20 years. Yeah. How do you get from I want to change jobs to what problem are you trying to solve? What part of that is the problem?
Uh-huh. So two things, this is chapter 2 and 3 in my book.
I love it.
Yes. No, you're doing great. You're doing great. You're walking people right through the chapters. Okay. So level 2, or chapter 2, you can actually write what problem am I trying to solve 7 times. And this only takes like 6 or 7 minutes, but it's called 7 level problem solving. Mm-hmm. This is executive coaches use this on the 7 level deep exercise. And they use this to figure out your true motivation for wanting to start a business or make a change in your life. It's meant to really solidify your motivations. Mm. I use the same exercise for really drilling down on what problem you're trying to solve. For example, we'll go back to the father analogy, you know, the father. Okay. So the problem I'm trying to solve is I want my dad to be okay with my business. The problem I'm trying to solve is I really want to start my business and not have my dad mad at me. The problem I'm trying to solve is I really want to kind of break free from the chains of living life for my dad and not for myself. The problem I'm trying to solve is being okay with myself despite what my dad thinks. Do you see how that, I know I didn't go through all 7, but do you see how that got a little more clear?
Yeah, each iteration seems like it's getting you towards something, whether or not that, like for me, it would be one of those situations where I'm like, I want to change. I want to start a business. And I'll use my mom as an example. I don't talk to my dad, but I don't want my mom to be upset with me, I guess would mm-hmm. be one of those steps. And then you keep going. But it seems like it takes a certain amount of, again, self-awareness to go, this is what the problem is. I want to start a business. That's one thing. But, and I don't want my mom to be mad at me that takes some self-awareness that that is the causality there. And I hope that that's like chapter four in the book, because it's something that, how do you know? How do you identify again that, that iteration is great, but what if you don't know that that's the actual thing that's upsetting you?
Then you spaghetti dump.
Okay.
And you take each sentence. If you journal the spaghetti dump, okay, you can use each sentence as a separate problem to solve.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. And then you can underline the emotional problems to solve and highlight the practical problems to solve. And that really is the best way people have gotten unstuck. It's just sorting the emotional problems to solve from the practical problems to solve.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. All right. That I love that. And actually, while we're talking about it, your book's coming out very soon. Tell me about the book. Yay. That's so exciting. What is it called? And where are people going to be able to get it?
Problem Solved: Simple Habits for Complex Decisions. And these are complex decisions, right? Like how to overcome years of trauma from your mother so that you can start your own business. That's a complex decision, right? And so I really, my ferocious and humble attempt to take the problem-solving strategies in my own life of having that huge spaghetti issue, right? And then waffling it down. It's like, okay, here are all the problems I'm jumbling together as one. You know, how do I waffle them out and just, you can brain dump and then, you know, okay, each sentence is a different thing. Or you can have a friend say, hey, I'm going to probably give you 20 things. Can you like, catch the flying monkeys, that are flying and then sort them out. Mm-hmm. But I want people to hear this as a puzzle. Okay. Mm-hmm. If your life is puzzling, when you start a puzzle, you don't say, okay, the corner piece is the absolute only place I can start on this puzzle, right? So I have to sort all through this and do hours and hours of brain dump spaghetti to find which is the perfect piece to start with. Okay, we know that's ineffective. That's not how you make a puzzle. So the whole point of this exercise is to find somewhere to start. Find one puzzle piece to grab and then start there. If we get caught up in the, where's the exactly right, most perfect problem to solve, and it's the only place that can possibly start, you're going to stay stuck. You're going to be in overanalysis paralysis. Your brain just gave you another reason to self-sabotage, another reason to procrastinate, and another reason not to move forward. And so the waffling down the action steps is just to give you enough of a direction that you can start somewhere. So that's the basis of the book, which is not what you just asked me, but I had to add it. but the simple habits for complex decisions, right? And solving those problems. So, and I'm also starting a podcast and leading into the book, Problem Solved, Decision Made, where you are a guest. And yay. So your listeners can definitely check that out as well.
That's phenomenal. Wow. I can't wait to read the book. But also, I think that to me, the framework is deceptively easy. Like, oh, you have to unwrap. But there's a lot that goes into it. And I know that anybody who's listening to this, if you're listening to this and you're an innovator, these principles apply to what you're trying to do too, because as you know, I like to say, we're all in the business of solving other people's problems. So tell me, Sarah, how does somebody who wants to find you, in addition to the book, find you?
So yes, check me out on Instagram, Problem Solved. They can check out my website, Sarah K. Ramsey. I always use the K. You remember that version of me that was a big hot mess? Her name was Sarah Ramsey. Sarah K. Ramsey knows better and does better. So you'll always see me use the K in my name. It's an identity shift for me. And they can get a free gift on my website that solves a toxic person problem, which I, using a method I call Around the House, which has helped thousands of people. I mean, I don't know why I said dozens, but I mean, just so many people have examples of, oh, I was dealing with this really frustrating situation and I went around the house, which is really common language, and they can get a free gift from there. And that will solve a problem this week. And that is a promise.
Oh, that's fabulous. I love it. So those are the places to find Sarah K. Ramsey. Love, 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 love that. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to be here. I have just one other question before we leave this part of the show and move on to the little bonus round. And this question is, It's a simple little question, but I find that it yields some profound answers. And the question is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Stop talking about your problems and start solving them. And I want to go back to the good listener and the emotional intelligence and some of these things that I think I am heartbroken at the people who are putting so much energy into. Well, you know, it's self-awareness if I just talk about it over and over again. And there's just such a deception. We deceive ourselves thinking that we're doing something about these things, but we're not getting anywhere. And there is a better way. It is absolutely possible. And that's the life I want people to have.
And mic drop. I love it. I love it. All right. Sarah K. Ramsey, this is fabulous. Thank you so much for being here. And obviously, if you're listening, you know you gotta have to go check out Sarah K. Ramsey's book and find out more about how to get your problem solved through your own perseverance and ability to spaghetti waffle act. This is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Innovative Mindset Podcast. If you're a member of the Coffee by the Water Club, you're going to get to hear Sarah K. Ramsey's bonus episode. So you can go there and do that. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg reminding you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you.